average social media interactions about key figures on Inauguration Day. Amanda Gorman, 4,000. Obama's, 1,000. Bernie Sanders, 1,000. Harris, 867. Trump, 772. Lady Gaga, 742. Jennifer Lopez, 655. Biden, 651.
I wonder if you'd ever see those folks on the same list under other circumstances.
Hi, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
We're coming to you from GeekWire in Seattle. What happens here matters everywhere, and every week on this show we talk about some of the most interesting and noteworthy stories we've been covering during the week. We are pleased to be joined by a guest commentator this week who's not really a guest, but she is our longtime colleague Monica Nicholsberg, GeekWire contributing editor who writes about subjects at the intersection of technology, innovation, politics, and public policy. It's great to have you here, Monica.
It's great to be back.
This is the perfect week to bring you back because it is Inauguration Week, which is the moment when the entire tech industry looks around and says, okay, now what? Because the Biden administration really brings some new realities for a lot of different companies, players, key people in the tech industry. And Monica, you've been exploring this in a variety of ways. Let's talk first about what the Biden administration means for tech. You talked last week with a series of government affairs leaders at companies in the Seattle region, and it seemed very much like this was a new era in a variety of different ways. One of the things that stuck out to me was it was not just about tech. It was about hoping for unity and this idea that perhaps the two parties can work together now to actually get something done. What else did you hear?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to chat with the top government affairs folks at a number of tech companies that are based here in Washington, big ones like Microsoft, down to more nitty-gritty technology-focused companies like Avalara, which focuses on tax automation software. And one question I asked them was what they were most concerned about, what the biggest obstacle they see on the path forward is. And pretty universally, they said partisan division. But I was surprised that they're really optimistic, that they are, you know, in some ways buying into this message from the Biden administration of unity and hopeful that as we enter this new era, more can get done and possibly even the technology sector can be a partner in accomplishing some of our mutual goals.
It seemed like there was a renewed effort among each of these companies to reach out to the Biden administration to have essentially a fresh start with the White House under new leadership. What types of issues are these companies lobbying the White House about? What's important to the folks that you talk to?
I think that's true. There is a lot of outreach happening, and it seems to strike a really different tone than if you remember the very beginning of the Trump administration when he held that big tech summit with the CEOs of a bunch of different tech companies. And it had kind of a contentious undertone to it. Whereas today, I think you are seeing these companies bring a lot of hope that the Biden administration will address some of their concerns, among them broadband internet access and equity generally, so that people across the country are able to participate in work, in school, in life, particularly in this pandemic era when connectivity is more important than ever.
Todd, in this vein, I'm very curious what you thought about the timing of Amazon sending the letter to President Biden saying, hey, now we're going to put our logistical power behind the COVID vaccine efforts if you need us. I mean, what did you think of that timing that it came out the day that really hours after he was inaugurated?
Right. There was a lot of blowback against Amazon under the theory that the company had not reached out to the Trump White House or to the folks who were running Operation Warp Speed under the Trump administration. Amazon actually did some truth squatting, fact checking on that and pushed back against the notion that it had not offered to help. And they said that they did, in fact, reach out previously. And it just happens to be that they also reached out to the new administration. Now, did they reach out in the same way?
This was very public way.
Yes, exactly.
This was a PR move.
And I think it blew up in their face a bit, which had them backtracking and trying to point out that they were at least behind the scenes trying to do it previously. I did think that was very interesting. And just think of how the Trump administration would have responded to an overture from Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. So why would they make a real public effort to try to engage with somebody who's been very combative with Jeff Bezos specifically and Amazon as a whole? But I was just really struck by the change in dynamic right now on these big corporate tech companies and like how they are now positioning themselves to potentially play ball. And obviously they want to be put in the best light forward with the new administration, but hopefully there is an effort. I mean, Amazon, as an example, has a massive amount of logistics and retail footprint across the country that hopefully if they do put their resources behind it, it could actually help.
Now, at the same time, there are some issues that I think the tech industry would love to move beyond, but it isn't really clear yet whether the federal government is going to let them go. I mean, one of those is that's a, still a big outstanding question is this idea of content moderation online that was a huge issue during the Trump years. And you had both Republicans and Democrats taking issue with the content that was or wasn't hosted on social media companies for different reasons. You know, you had a lot of folks on the right who said that conservative voices were being suppressed and silenced, and concerns on the left that these platforms were allowing hate speech and content that incites violence to just run rampant. So different concerns, but there was bipartisan energy behind changing laws that shield those companies from liability for the content on their sites. And it's really not clear whether or not that will continue into the Biden years.
This was interesting, Monica, because it's something we talked a bit about with Margaret O'Meara, the University of Washington historian, a couple weeks ago. And it's a common thread running through some of our recent episodes. And it deals in part with Section 230, which is that part of the Communications Decency Act that lets companies that operate platforms essentially have immunity from legal liability for what people do or say on their platforms. And Amazon Web Services essentially was able to cite a portion of that section to allow itself to boot Parler off of its platform, a different portion of that section. So it's coming into play in different ways here. But my theory that we discussed with Margaret was that under the new administration and the Democratic House and Senate, that the focus on Section 230 and content moderation would be lower. Did you find any indication of that in the reporting that you did this week?
I did, yeah. The people I spoke with who track issues of tech regulation and antitrust really closely agree that there is some truth to that, that under a Democrat-controlled Congress and a Democrat in the White House, the focus is likely to shift more toward issues of workers' rights and marketplace fairness, which is a more kind of traditional antitrust issue, and away from these murkier issues of online speech and the sort of debunked claim that there's censorship of conservative voices on social media. Although I know that that's a subject of a lot of debate, particularly with what's happened in the past few weeks. So I do think that it's likely that the priorities could shift in the way that you predict, but the bigger picture thing here is this administration has so much to deal with right now with the pandemic, the economy, climate change. I mean, the priority list is long. So it's not seeming super likely that these tech regulation issues are going to be a focus, at least not in the beginning.
I totally agree with that. I mean, if you listen to Biden's inauguration speech and the problems that he rattled off from climate change to the pandemic to rebooting the economy, it just seems like the tech antitrust issues are going to be put on the back burner for at least the first 2 years of the administration. In my view, you can only do so much. I'm concerned about the country tackling these initial crises we're facing right off the bat. And so hopefully there's a consensus that can be formed across aisles to take on what are just common problems for us.
Monica, you also talked with some antitrust experts to get a real specific sense for what happens with the existing cases, too. I want to talk about that, but first let's take a break. You're listening to GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and Monica Nicholsberg. We are talking about what technology we'll be facing and what will be changing under the Biden administration following the inauguration of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris this past week. Monica, the issue on antitrust is interesting because you have these kind of threats of actions and investigations into Amazon, for example, in the United States. But then you have actual cases proceeding against Google and Facebook. You talked with some antitrust experts about this. What happens to the existing court cases that the federal government is pursuing against these companies?
They're largely expected to continue, although they could be narrowed and the sort of scope and focus of them could shift a little bit. But the people I spoke with in my reading didn't indicate that it's very likely that the Biden administration will pull out of those ongoing lawsuits. So in that way, you could see antitrust live on past the Trump era. I think what's less likely is for Congress to rewrite laws that really kind of change the way we interpret antitrust. And that might be necessary to really achieve some of the aims that the people who really want to see a crackdown of big tech companies are going for.
What does that mean for Amazon? Does that mean that they've essentially escaped here? They sort of ran out the clock on the Trump administration?
It's not clear. There aren't publicly announced cases against Amazon, but it's been reported, widely reported, that the federal government is looking into the company and particularly looking into complaints from sellers who've said that Amazon abuses its position as a marketplace operator. And I think those inquiries could continue, that maybe could even materialize into a lawsuit. But it feels much more concrete that the lawsuits that have already been filed against Facebook and Google will go forward. Amazon is still a bit of an open question.
Yeah, it's interesting because if there's any company, going back to our point earlier of Amazon reaching out previously only under the radar to the Trump administration, they have been at odds with the previous White House. I mean, there's no question about it. This company and that White House were clashing frequently over pretty much anything simply because of an apparent personal conflict that President Trump had with the company and Jeff Bezos in particular. So why didn't Amazon get targeted specifically by like the Federal Trade Commission or the Department of Justice under the Trump administration? You would have think that that would have been target number one.
Because did they focus on anything? I mean, that's a real question. I mean, was there a deep analysis? I think there was the flavor of the moment. And it just seemed like the last 4 years was a blur, moving from one hot topic to the next. And like, I don't know of anything really. I mean, there were some accomplishments, but boy, it didn't seem like there was a lot of laser focus to drill down into something with that much depth.
Well, the House Judiciary Committee did release a pretty comprehensive report documenting anti-competitive behavior at each of the companies that were...
Yeah, not from the... But that wasn't from the Trump administration.
No, it wasn't. It was from a Democrat-controlled House. The Trump DOJ, you're right, is kind of surprisingly absent on Amazon when it comes to antitrust enforcement, at least from what we know publicly. But I wouldn't say that Amazon ire is really the provenance of Republicans or Democrats. You know, you've got huge progressive stars on the left who constantly go after Amazon, like Representative Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders. Republicans and Democrats are pretty equal opportunity when it comes to taking swings at Amazon.
Yeah, or big tech in general. I think that's right. And that's the one thought I have on maybe why this gets some support. I still think it's going to be a back burner issue for at least a couple of years. But if it does get momentum, it's because of what Monica just said. The New York Times even had an email newsletter out this week where they said, hating big tech is one of the few areas of bipartisan agreement. So that could be the area that Biden and the Democratic-controlled Congress says they want to partner with their Republican allies to bring on board. I just think there are other things that are top of mind, whether it's restarting the economy, getting vaccines out to people in a safe manner. They're going to have to take priority over this. Now, maybe they can do dual or, you know, tracks with five or six different tracks of things. They're going to need to, but boy, they've got big problems right in front of them that are, I think, going to take up a lot of the oxygen in the room.
I agree. And I also think that one way to look at it is, why would this administration and Congress waste this opportunity when they have full Democrat control, when they don't really know what the second 2 years of the Biden administration will look like? Maybe they should save the bipartisan stuff for that period.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's pretty interesting. Think about pushing through the more radical components of their agenda here. I don't get the sense that they're going down that path, but that will be interesting to watch.
It's interesting to think about that in the context of Amazon reaching out, offering to help on the vaccine front. Because if you're the Biden administration, maybe it's big enough that you can separate those things out. But if you take a company like that up on some massive effort to help with the vaccine rollout, can you then turn around and go after them from an antitrust perspective? I don't know. Obviously you can, but you can see where you're basically trading in political favors there if you're Amazon in some ways, or at least trying to, you know,
extend an olive branch.
Exactly. Thank you.
You know, I mentioned this New York Times story just to kind of throw a curveball into the mix and change gears, because I know we're talking a lot about antitrust, and part of our argument is we don't think it's going to happen here, at least in the short term. But they did a to-do list of the tech to-do list for Biden. And one of the things that kind of struck me, which was interesting, was, could you imagine under a Biden administration that he would have gone after TikTok in the same way that Trump did? And this barring of Chinese companies from stock exchanges in the U.S. But I think this is cited in that New York Times story. I think this is going to be a pretty interesting thing to watch, is how Biden interacts with China, because there is a united foe to some degree across the country in China, and the tech industry has been harmed in many ways by China in terms of stealing IP. And so I think that's going to be an interesting and very delicate balance that Biden's going to have to walk on China. And I'm just curious to see how that plays out. Any thoughts on that?
The TikTok situation strikes me as very interesting, because I think you would have seen action on that potentially. And really, you didn't see much action in the end from the Trump administration on TikTok.
Well, I think they got distracted.
Yeah, you saw a lot of fire and fury, and then kind of a half-assed deal involving Oracle that really didn't solve the problem. And to me, and I know that's difficult not to get political here, but I just think that an administration that really was conscientious and caring about the actual outcome and not just about the initial hubbub would have built a case against TikTok and ByteDance, its owner in China, about how they were using user data and the potential security and privacy risks to American consumers. They would have built that case and then would have taken some kind of decisive action rather than just kind of half-assing it and basically coming out with something that ultimately didn't solve the problem.
Yeah, there's another way to approach this too, and as it relates to China more generally, and this goes back to Margaret O'Meara, the University of Washington historian who we had on our show a couple weeks ago, who spoke about the massive investments that the government, federal government, has made into the tech sector in the U.S. that has sparked all this innovation. And maybe that's the way to counter China in a bigger way, is to have a big, big federal initiative. Because you see what's going on in China in terms of their initiatives over the next 5, 10, 15 years, just as it relates to AI. And like, boy, I think the U.S. probably still has a slight lead in AI now, but maybe that's the way to counter some of this, is just massive federal investment into programs that would spark additional innovation and research.
But imagine the politics of that. I mean, we just said the one thing that Republicans and Democrats can agree on is they hate big tech. And with all of our other priorities right now, if the federal government were to make this huge financial investment in the tech sector, I don't see it happening.
Maybe not, but it's needs to be thought about, at least when you think about countering China. To your point, I think, Monica, on that, where they might be able to get some bipartisan support is something on as simple as something we all should have, is more, you know, rural broadband and higher capacity internet. So something like that seems like a layup to try. Like, who would be against that?
I agree. And another opportunity, which came up a lot in my discussions with these government affairs leads as well, is worker training. You know, we have huge, massive unemployment in this country right now, and a big, big opportunity, a huge shortage of jobs in the tech sector. And if we could build a better bridge to connect those people who are out of work with these jobs of the future that pay well, I think that you could get the political will behind something like that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think it does tie into AI to some degree, because if you believe that AI is coming in a big way and it's going to disrupt a lot of industries and as a result disrupt a lot of jobs, you should be both investing in that and the next generation technologies and the same amount of what you're going to do to redeploy displaced workers into new industries. And so the two, I think, go a bit hand in hand, actually.
They're certainly connected, yeah.
Monica, I was going to respond to what you said by saying, yes, but couldn't they create some kind of moonshot initiative that didn't help the existing tech companies, but instead created a more fertile field for new innovators to rise up? And then I started thinking, well, but yeah, then the problem is, as was illustrated in all of the antitrust hearings, is then the first thing that would happen is that the big tech companies would gobble those up. So maybe they could issue some kind of federal funding, federal grant, DARPA spinouts, whatever it may be, with some sort of covenant in the funding that says, you shall not be absorbed by Mark Zuckerberg in 3 years or whatever it is, or Jeff Bezos, whoever it may be. But to me, I love this idea because we've been on our heels so much as a society and a country for the past however many years. It feels like a decade now. I guess it's really, if you look at the pandemic, only been a year. Why can't we get on our toes and really think, okay, where do we want to be? And to me, the opportunity there, it was also illustrated in the comments by some of the government affairs leaders from these tech companies, Monica, and that was climate. So to me, that would be the opportunity to say, okay, good of the planet, not good of the industry. Let's go for it. Here's what we're going to do. And I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. And really, at this point, who can't get behind that?
Yeah, and I think that it is very likely that we'll see these kinds of initiatives and investments in clean energy. And that is certainly part of the technology industry. And I think a little less vulnerable to acquisitions than some of the other deals that we've seen over the past few years. I expect to see that in the Biden administration.
Hey, Monica and Todd, there was one thing in Biden's inauguration speech that didn't come out in terms of, you know, the five or six big efforts that we need to tackle as a country, climate change being one, the reboot of the economy, COVID, of course.
Wait, John, wait, let's do this as a teaser. What is it?
I'm teasing because I was going to quiz you guys on what you think it is. It's tech related.
Okay. We will have the answer coming up after the break. Great teaser, John. You're listening to GeekWire. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and GeekWire contributing editor Monica Nicholsberg, who's been covering the ins and outs of how the tech industry will fare in the Biden administration. John, why don't you repeat the quiz that you were about to give?
Absolutely. And I think I'm going to stump both of you on this. My question and quiz was, there was something that is a grave challenge that we face as a nation that's related to technology that at least I, in my listening, did not address.
I know the answer.
Todd knows it. Monica, do you know it?
I think we better give it to Todd.
All right. Todd's got it.
AI and automation.
No, because we just talked about AI and automation.
Right. But did he talk about that in his speech? He didn't.
No, he didn't. But that's a big deal. But I think this is he was talking about like immediate risks that we faced as a country. And when you think about the pandemic, the economy, climate, they're right there. Okay. And there's another one that's been right there. It's been in the news over the last months. And I fear that people have almost kind of forgotten about it. And that's my point.
SolarWinds, cybersecurity?
Yeah, it's the cyber attack, attack we're under. Like, I guess in listening to the speech, I was a little surprised that there wasn't mention of that, especially in light of Trump making claims that there have been no wars under his watch.
John, I've been thinking about that. That story, which is probably, apart from the pandemic, one of the most, if not the most important story of 2020.
Yeah.
has just gone away.
But then the insurrection happened, and then the inauguration happened, and it was like, okay, have the Russians like penetrated every single component of our infrastructure on a federal government level? Like, what is going on there? We should have the great Christopher Budd, our security expert, do an analysis and look at that from a policy standpoint in terms of maybe why it's not front and center for the Biden administration.
Great. Will do.
You're on it?
I'd read that.
He's been too busy analyzing my tone of voice for my we did a podcast on Amazon's Halo health band, and this actually does relate, Monica, because one of the pieces of feedback that you got from Michael Schutzler, who is the CEO of the Washington Technology Industry Association, is that he thinks federal privacy legislation is one thing that could be in the hopper and realistic under the new administration.
It could be, yeah. And a big reason for that is the action we're seeing at the state level. So California has already passed its own pretty sweeping data privacy law. Washington State is considering a similar bill this session. And I think if you start to see a lot of states passing their own data privacy regulations, at a certain point, it becomes untenable to comply with all of those. And that could add a little bit of pressure to the federal government and get them to potentially pick this up, especially because we've been behind the European Union for so long on this issue.
Yeah. And to me, health data from these kinds of health trackers, which was the issue that Senator Amy Klobuchar raised in her letter to the Department of Health and Human Services about Amazon Halo, that really speaks to the need for some kind of federal privacy legislation. Because since these health trackers, like the Halo, are not considered medical devices, they're not then governed by the HIPAA Act, which is the Information Portability Act for medical data. And so you're kind of up to the whims of the companies in these cases. And Amazon would say, hey, we're doing great. You know, we're really protecting it and everything, but there really is no oversight, whether it be government or independent audits. And we did a whole podcast on this in the Health Tech Podcast. And I'd encourage people to check out the GeekWire Health Tech Podcast. I had a lot of fun doing the piece.
It's a great podcast, Todd.
Thanks. Thanks, John.
Nice job. Hey, and I just need to step back a little bit on my remarks related to the cyber attack. While I didn't hear it in the inauguration, and I don't think it was in there, and I haven't heard anything about it over the last—
Did you just Google?
Several weeks. Apparently, based on my research, as a part of Biden's economic revival plan, there is, quote, a plan to launch the most ambitious effort ever to modernize U.S. cyber defenses. So it's in the plan. I guess my point was, I thought it would be a little more front and center, or it should be, and we need to keep asking questions and keep that story front and center. Anyway, just wanted to add that it's not like it has been completely ignored by the administration.
To your point, John, there is one more story that we have not talked about yet that relates directly to the Seattle tech market that I personally think will be fascinating to watch to see if it changes under the Biden administration. So let me quiz you.
This is a quiz.
Do you know what it is?
Right back at me.
It relates to two companies.
I think I got it. But when you said two, I think it sparked a thought in my mind. I think it is the continuing battle over the Jedi Pentagon contract between Microsoft and Amazon, the $10 billion contract that was awarded to Microsoft in, I think, 2019, and has continued to be litigated through 2020.
Was that 2019?
I think it happened in 2019, and a lot of the back and forth litigation happened last year, and now the Pentagon just came out recently and kind of reaffirmed that Microsoft indeed should win this contract. But the reason this is interesting is Amazon has filed a lawsuit, right? That they have basically said that the reason we didn't get it was because Trump hates Jeff Bezos and Amazon. And so it's interesting to see how that plays out.
Right. And to me, the administrative change is actually an interesting test of that theory, because if that is the case, then the Department of Defense is theoretically, at least now, freed from the shackles of bias in the White House, right?
And maybe that's why Amazon, a few hours after Biden was inaugurated, Dave Clark, CEO of Worldwide Consumer at Amazon, shot off a really nice letter saying, hey, we'll do whatever it takes.
I think for that argument to work, though, the current Department of Defense would have to reevaluate the bids, because until that happens, Amazon will just say the decision we're living with is a Trump era decision.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that. I mean, to the point of everything we're saying here, it's all about priorities. And I think if any of these things was a priority, you could probably predict which way it would go. And I think if the Department of Defense reevaluated it now, boy, both companies seem completely convinced of their arguments. Like, there's no one way to look at this on either side and go, yeah, you're not really into it, you know. So I can tell you that both companies would completely dispute this.
Have we looked at that story with that angle, Todd, where the changing administration could actually potentially change the outcome on the Jedi contract?
Not specifically.
It's on the list, John. Don't give away all our good story ideas yet.
It is on the list.
Is it on the list? Okay, I know. Well,
I keep asking, and I know that you can't be dependent on somebody answering the question to raise it, but it sure would be nice to have a semblance of an answer to it before we wrote about it.
It seems pretty early. And again, as you said, priorities.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
That's an interesting one. It's $10 billion, which in and of itself is a lot of money over 10 years, even for these companies. But more than that, it's actually a lot more money, because I think it's kind of a symbol of approval from the federal government. And I think it was a shot in the arm for Microsoft that they won it. And then companies can look to them and say, hey, they're good enough for the Pentagon. They're, you know, good enough for our e-commerce data or whatever. We could go on and on forever. Any last thoughts that either of you'd want to wrap up with?
One thing we didn't talk about that's we're still grappling with what the long-term implications will be is this shift to remote work. So I should add a little plug for that. It's definitely something that's on the minds of these government affairs folks, and how you adjust policies both internally at your company and government policy to deal with these changes, you know, everything from transportation infrastructure to compensation. There are a lot of variables, and we don't really know what it's going to mean long term, but it's certainly something that everyone is thinking about.
John, that's a big issue for you.
Yeah, that's a meaty one. And I think Monica's right. It touches on a lot of aspects of how public policy interacts with the economy and the tech industry. So I think that's one to continue to watch closely. You know, Monica, I know you've covered this closely, and this ties into kind of a workforce issues, just gig economy workers. I think that's another thing that will be up in the air in terms of how they get treated as employees or not. And we've seen some changes here recently as it relates to their classification. And I think that's another government policy that could be interesting as it relates to the gig economy.
That's right. There are so many meaty, interesting topics that we're going to be tracking under the Civic umbrella in the next year and the next 4 years. So keep listening.
Well, Todd, we should tell our listeners, we've gotten this far, we should tell our listeners about our renewed efforts on the Civic beat. This coming year, we are going to be covering these issues in much more detail in 2021 with the help in part from Monica and others on the GeekWire team, part of our commitment to do great journalism at this very, very interesting connection point between public policy and tech. So I think you're going to see us talking more about this in the future, because as we've just discussed here, this ties into a lot of the companies that we cover day in, day out here at GeekWire.
That's a great reminder, John. Folks can follow all of that coverage at geekwire.com/civic and also subscribe to our daily email newsletter to keep up with all of our news. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast, everybody. Our podcast is produced by Kurt Milton. Our theme music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. Monica, thanks very much for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
That's GeekWire contributing editor Monica Nicholsberg. Monica, remind folks where they can follow you on Twitter or wherever, whichever social network you prefer, actually.
Maybe she's not on anymore. Maybe she's...
Insta, right?
Parler?
I'm not on Parler. I don't think anyone is right now. But you can follow me on Twitter at M Nicholsberg or Instagram at Pacific North Wonder.
Perfect. All right. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire.